asked me to take on more and more responsibility, relied on me for my expertise. I terminated my employment on the 13th of June in writing. I terminated that employment under the clear reasons that I could no longer be a part of this unethical, inhumane operation. After I tendered my resignation on the 13th of June, UG Solutions asked me to stay, to reconsider. They continued to pay me for an entire pay period. They continued to cover my life insurance. They continued to pay for all of my expenses until the 26th of June. If UG Solutions terminated me or fired me on the 13th of June, why would they continue to pay me my full pay, my coverage, and pay for all my expenses through the 26th of June, asking me to stay and reconsider my position? I wasn't fired. I resigned because I could no longer be a part of it. In terms of performance, all of the operations, the convoy operation plans, the distribution plans, the operational plans, I generated. I wrote them for UG Solutions because they did not have anyone on their staff who had the requisite experience, knowledge, and expertise to do that type of work. So you're welcome, UG Solutions. You're welcome, Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. Because if it weren't for me and other contractors that have skill, former Green Berets, former veterans, if it weren't for us, they're doing the work, you wouldn't be able to operate at all. No one in the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, from Johnny Moore to Phil Riley of SRS to Jameson Giovanni of UG Solutions, have any experience in in-depth planning and operational planning, period, much less for a humanitarian assistance mission. They're understaffed, they're underqualified, and they're in way over their head for a mission that they should not have.
I just want to explain to people, according to the New York Times, Johnny Moore is a former Trump campaign advisor, was appointed to the board of the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. Moore was co-chair of the 2016 Trump presidential campaign's Evangelical Advisory Board and an influential figure during Trump's first administration. He was part of a coalition of Christian leaders who paid regular visits to the White House as well as prayer meetings in the Oval Office. His PR company, Kairos, was acquired in 2022 by JDA Worldwide. He now serves as president of that larger firm. When he announced the acquisition on social media, Moore referred to his work in public relations as his day job, as he has had many other roles and projects linked to his faith and interest in foreign policy, including writing books on the persecution of Christians in the Middle East and Africa. He told the New York Times he and other evangelicals had pressed Trump to recognize Israeli sovereignty over Jerusalem and to move the U.S. embassy there. He, like many evangelicals, including Mike Huckabee, the U.S. ambassador to Israel, is committed to a Jewish state based on his interpretation of the Bible. I wanted to go to one of the videos you shared with the BBC showing armed American guards working with GHF opening fire at an aid site in Gaza on May 29th. This is a short excerpt.
I think you hit one.
That's what we hear someone saying. Who is saying that, Anthony? And describe what we're seeing and hearing in this video. Who is firing? Who are they shooting at?
In that video, the firing that you hear is gunfire from an assault rifle being fired by a UG Solutions independent security contractor. That individual is firing at a group of unarmed civilians who have left the site. That is distribution site number 4 in the central, up in central Gaza near the Nesserim corridor. The Palestinians had left the site. They were moving south back towards the bridge over Gadi or Waza or Gaza, Wadi Gaza, back into Barish, where they, the town they came from. This individual was shooting at them, at their feet, over their heads, into the crowd. You hear the clear and distinct American voice in the shooting. That shooting is very close to that camera where I am standing. I filmed that video. Not Hamas, not the Gaza Health Ministry, not some biased agent news media outlet. I filmed that. An American. That individual that's shooting, you hear him clearly say, woohoo! Cheering. And the response from the other contractor on the ground, who was standing about 15 feet from me, who says, "I think you got one." And at the same time, the other contractor then responds with, "Hell yeah, boy." What they're talking about is the got one is a human being, a civilian, an unarmed, starving civilian who came to our site to get food, who is returning home. Why did we shoot at him? Because we wanted them to leave faster. That video is genuine. It's been timestamped, analyzed. It's been geolocated. It's been the metadata has been assessed. In fact, UG Solutions themselves posted that exact same video on their press release page to refute the video itself. So they used the video that I filmed to refute the video that I filmed.
So UG Solutions, who you worked for, is a U.S. mercenary firm. GHF distribution sites are guarded by two U.S. security firms, Safe Reach Solutions, SRS, and UG Solutions, SRS, run by a former high-ranking CIA officer tied to a U.S. private equity firm in Chicago, according to Middle East Eye. How did you get recruited?
Again, so I was not recruited by Safe Reach Solutions or the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. I didn't work for them. I was a subcontractor specifically under UG Solutions. UG Solutions is located in Davidson, North Carolina. So they were first reaching out to retired special operators, special operations forces soldiers who had that specific skill set, who were local to North Carolina, because it would have been very quicker and easier to recruit them and get them onboarded. So I was called by UG Solutions when the operation was first explained to me. I felt that it was a noble cause. One thing that I will agree with Johnny Moore in this, one thing he has said early on, there is nothing more Christian than feeding people. I would agree with that. What I don't agree with is that what we're doing is not that. Lying, covering the truth under the auspice of feeding people for profit. Remember, these are private organizations. The person in charge of Safe Reach Solutions is a former CIA officer and part of a private equity firm. That's who we have in charge of distributing humanitarian aid to a starving population. So when I first went into this, I was excited. I felt it was a noble cause. Within hours of being in Israel and seeing how this was going to unfold, I immediately had dire concerns as to the intentions, as to the execution, and what was going to happen when this fails.
Did other people share your feelings? And is it accurate to call you, though you are a former retired Green Beret, lieutenant colonel in special forces for years, is it accurate to call you a mercenary as you worked with the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation?
So I would not refer to myself as a mercenary, nor would I refer to myself as a whistleblower. I'm a patriotic American who wants America to know the truth. When I took this contract to go on this mission, my motivations were clear. I wanted to use my years of expertise, my experience in planning, my experience in executing operations of a large-scale magnitude to contribute to this mission succeeding. That's what I wanted. I retired. I recently had retired. Thoroughly enjoyed being a stay-at-home dad, watching the Golden Girls in the afternoon and enjoying my afternoon walks with my dog. Enjoyed that. I didn't take on this mission for personal gain or money. I took on this mission because I believed in it. I resigned my contract and left, walked away from the money, and they were paying us a lot of money. Walked away from that money because nothing is going to buy my soul. Nothing is going to pay for my values and my patriotism as an American. I'm an American first. I'm not a contractor. I'm not a mercenary. I'm not a whistleblower. I'm a patriotic American that wants the American people to know the truth of what we were involved in a very complex and complicated environment that, quite frankly, right now, we are on the wrong side of history.
We're going to end it there, but I want to just be very clear. You saw former U.S. military, you saw IDF, you saw the Israeli soldiers opening fire on hungry Palestinians.
Without a doubt, yes. Full stop.
Anthony Aguilar worked as a contractor with UG Solutions, with the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, aid delivery operation, so-called. Retired Lieutenant Colonel, served for 25 years in the U.S. Army Special Forces as a Green Beret, has been awarded the Purple Heart and the Bronze Star. Thank you for joining us. Coming up, Jan Egeland, Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council. Stay with us.
He was her only child, her baby boy. She was his second daughter, a father's pride and joy. Somebody's mother, brother, best friend, sister, lover. Maybe an A1 student running, hiding, taking cover. The women gather, crying tears that fill a million oceans. It doesn't matter where you're living. The women gather.
Sweet Honey and the Rock in our Democracy Now! Firehouse studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. On Sunday, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu claimed there is no starvation in Gaza.
Israel is presented as though we are applying a campaign of starvation in Gaza. What a bold-faced lie. There is no policy of starvation in Gaza, and there is no starvation in Gaza.
Well, today, the world's leading hunger monitor issued a dire warning, saying, quote, the worst-case scenario of famine is currently playing out in the Gaza Strip, unquote. To talk more about the humanitarian catastrophe, we're joined by Jan Egeland, Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council, one of the largest independent aid organizations in Gaza. Jan, welcome back to Democracy Now! First respond to the Israeli Prime Minister saying there is no starvation in Gaza.
Well, he's in a minority of one in this world, really. Well, maybe together with his right-wing extremists in his government, to claim that. He hasn't been in Gaza and seen the starving children. I've been there. I've seen them. So people from all nations all over the world, including from Norway, my own country, who have gone there. We have had a historic relationship since we were campaigning for the creation of the State of Israel. We see the truth. And I think it's important for the American public to really understand that when I say the fingerprints of the U.S. policy and the other European countries that provide arms to Israel's campaign in Gaza is contributing to war crimes. And I think your historically important interview with the Lieutenant Colonel from the Green Berets Special Forces, who told everything that he saw, which is a continued criminality on behalf of this so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. It's important to know that this is funded by U.S. government, by U.S. taxpayers. It will not look good when history will judge this.
Jan Egeland, you have the GHF, four sites where people are gunned down when they try to get food, replacing 400 sites coordinated by the United Nations. Gaza, your organization, Norwegian Refugee Council, have been on the ground for a long time in Gaza. Can you talk right now about Israel allowing airdrops? How effective is that? And how do you recreate these 400 sites?
But there was indeed 400 sites when there was the ceasefire, when Israeli hostages were released and we were allowed to work. Israel broke off that in March. I hope you will all remember. It was broken off by Israel itself after many hostages were released back into Israel. And we could feed the entire population in Gaza. Now, after all of these months of deliberate, systematic starvation women and children in Gaza. Even the U.S. government, the German government, the British government, and the French government, those who have provided the arms to this indiscriminate bombing, say there is starvation. Now Netanyahu's government is saying, okay then, we're very afraid of sanctions now. And then they allow airdrops, which is the worst possible way of providing assistance. Who likes airdrops? Well, TV journalists like it, diplomats, politicians like it, because it's very photogenic. But one airdrop is 25 tons. That's 2.5 trucks. We need 60,000 tons of food per month in normal circumstances for more than 2 million people. 25 tons just dropped at random where anyone could pick them. I mean, Hamas could pick them up. Anyone could get them there in their heads. Certainly the people that we in the Norwegian Refugee Council were feeding, which were single mother-led families, widows with many children, the disabled, the elderly, they will get nothing of this aid, as they will get nothing from the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which was conjured by Israeli military and some strange American people who were working with this most extreme government in the history of Israel, to substitute the Norwegian Refugee Council and all of the other organizations which were there for a generation and have a proven track record. We were closed down by Hamas when we yielded their pressure to influence our work. They invaded our offices. We have a track record of standing up against Hamas, as we have a track record in standing up to the kind of manipulation that is now undertaken by the Israeli war machine in Gaza. It's we who have the professionality to be able to do this job.
Can you get food aid and humanitarian aid into Gaza now? Outside of airdrops, how many trucks are needed per day?
Well, we in Norwegian Refugee Council and nearly all other aid groups are still denied all access. There is a group of agencies, UN agencies, two or three non-governmental organizations, health organizations mainly, that are now authorized to do some work. I believe they get in 100, 150, it could be a little bit more today, trucks per day. The minimum is 600 trucks. So after full starvation for many months and very little food coming in, some at these chaotic hunger games organized by the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation in the south, but beyond that, very little aid. Now it's 1/6 of what it would be in normal times. It's an insult to Trump, to Starmer, to Macron, and to Merz, these leaders who say that they want this to change. It's not Netanyahu who's calling the shots. The tail is wagging the dog here, and everybody can see it.
President Trump contradicted Netanyahu and said he saw the pictures that these people look hungry, right? Palestinians look hungry. What can Trump do at this point as the major weapons supplier to Israel?
Well, the case is with the U.S. administration is very clear, really. If they tell the Netanyahu government to do the right thing, they will do so. What's the right thing? It's to open all of the border crossings so that all of the organizations that have a distribution apparatus on the inside, including us, but we are 100 organizations that are present in Gaza, have trusted local staff. We can feed people in the 400 distribution points that we had before Israel closed everything down. That's what Trump should be asking for. And then he should take, or rather, American forces or international forces should control of the border crossings. I wrote a letter to the U.S. administration, to the European Union, to international leaders in October after the horrific Hamas massacres in Israel, and said, if you let one side control aid access to the civilians on the other side, you will ask for trouble. I warned against it. You have to have an international control mechanism. I hope they will listen now, and as I think they understand that their fingerprints, I mean, now talking about these Western powers, fingerprints is now all over a crime scene, and history will judge.
Jan Egeland, I want to thank you for being with us. Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council speaking to us from Oslo. Norway, Spain, Ireland have joined the majority of nations in the world in recognizing the state of Palestine. France will do so in September. There's a UN conference going on right now, run by France and Saudi Arabia around Palestine. Coming up, two leading Israeli human rights groups have accused Israel of genocide. Back in 20 seconds. By the late Randy Weston, performed the song when we spoke with Democracy Now! In 2012. Check out democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now! Two leading Israeli human rights groups, B'Tselem and Physicians for Human Rights Israel, have accused Israel of genocide in Gaza. Yuli Novak, the executive director of B'Tselem, spoke in Jerusalem Monday.
The report we are publishing today is one we never imagined we would have to write. But in recent months, We have been witnessing a reality that has left us no choice but to acknowledge the truth. Israel is committing genocide against the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip.
We're joined right now by Sadiq Mikhaeli, International Outreach Director for the Israeli group B'Tselem. Welcome back to Democracy Now! Explain your findings at this point.
Thank you, Amy. Yes, the report we issued yesterday essentially finds that Israel's policies in the Gaza Strip, their catastrophic consequences, together with statements by senior Israelis, together with the documentation of what these statements led to, points us to the unequivocal conclusion that Israel is taking a systematic, organized action to destroy Palestinian society in Gaza. And this is the textbook definition of genocide. The report also says that this action by Israel is a reflection of a genocidal regime. And therefore, there is also a grave risk that given certain circumstances, the genocide, Israel's actions will spread to other areas where Palestinians live under Israel's control.
This isn't the first time B'Tselem has been the first Israeli group to speak out. In 2021, you called Israel an apartheid regime. Lay out your findings, what you document, what you call the clear intentional attack on civilians in order to destroy a group.
Yes. So, first of all, we rely both on witness testimonies collected by our field researchers in Gaza who have been evacuated but continue to collect information and personal accounts from Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. But we also rely on credible information from many other sources. So this is the body of information. We then looked at what Israeli policymakers said, and we in fact provided a very long list of these statements, and essentially there is no there's nothing that has happened that wasn't stated openly by Israeli policymakers. The catastrophic, the horrific consequences of this that we list in our report, aside from the huge, massive killing of civilians, you discussed it earlier in the program, reaching up to at least 60,000 people, of them tens of thousands of women and children. There is also the mass starvation now, as a matter of policy by Israel, of 2 million Gazans. There is the destruction, the razing of entire cities. There is a destruction of everything that is necessary to maintain human life. This is what we see in Gaza, and none of it was a secret. It's been known for months, and this has been going on for 22 months. Israeli policies have been clear, yet this has not led to a concerted to effective international action to stop this. And one of the things we say in the report, and one of the things we called for together with our colleagues from Physicians for Human Rights Israel yesterday, is for the international community as well as Israelis to take all action in the framework of international law to get this to stop, to get this to end. Now, yes, B'Tselem is an Israeli organization. We are based in Israel, and we're also made up of Israelis and Palestinians. And I think one of the important novelties, or the things that we say in this report that breaks new ground, is not just the discussion of what's happening on the ground right now in Gaza, but the discussion of the root causes of this Israeli genocide. And we call the report our genocide. We look at the history, and we also look at this horrific, horrendous trigger of October 7th, the Hamas atrocities that were perpetrated against Israeli civilians and have led to this terrible trauma that Israelis feel, were then exploited cynically by our government in order to push policies that the government and very powerful members of our government have been trying to promote even before, as I said, this massacre of October 7th. So the report essentially looks at not just the reality on the ground right now, but looks at why we have been, what made it possible for us to reach this horrendous stage where Israel is perpetrating genocide, where the international community is not stopping this, where Israelis, the majority of Israelis, are either silent or supportive of this genocide. And what can we say and do as people inside Israel, both Israelis and Palestinians who are operating within Israeli civil society, in order to stop it now?
As we reported in headlines just yesterday on Monday in the occupied West Bank, an Israeli settler shot and killed a Palestinian activist and teacher, 31-year-old Olda Mohammed Hadaleen, who played a key role in the production of the Oscar-winning documentary No Other Land. Residents identified his killer as Yinon Levy, an Israeli settler who was sanctioned by the Biden administration. The Trump administration lifted those sanctions. There's videos showing him firing a gun. Talk about the significance of this and the violence in the West Bank as well. We just have 30 seconds.
Yes, absolutely. I think, first of all, so I think this is just a clear example of how exposed Palestinian lives are under Israeli occupation and apartheid, both in the West Bank and certainly in Gaza. The lack of any consequences, we expect Yinon Levy to not have to pay a significant price, is the result of policy, and it's also the result of international inaction. And it is so symbolic that the Trump administration essentially lifted the sanctions, the very meager sanctions that were imposed by the Biden administration on this individual, but it's an entire system of impunity and support for this settler terror that has been responsible, and that we see as responsible, for the killing of dear Ode Hadaleen, who was really a friend to us all. Anyone who was active in the Masafer Yatta area knew Ode, stayed with him, spent time with him, and listened to him. He was an inspiring,
Sadiq
and amazing
Mikhaeli,
activist.
We're going to have to leave it there. I thank you for being with us with the Israeli Human Rights Group, B'Tselem.
Hey, SFU. Getting money back for all your empty or refundable bottles and cans just got a lot easier. Just sign up for Returned Express for free. You can bag your containers, tag the bag, and drop it through the window at the new Express and Go container in the East parking lot. Return It will count your containers and credit your refunds to your online account. Learn more at returnit.ca/SFU.